Excellent. So the title of my talk today is Culture and How It Shapes and Protects Against Stigma. I'm going to be talking about the work that I do among Chinese immigrant groups in the New York City, but with implications for other groups around the world. So the course, my research trajectory has really looked at the social factors that influence course of schizophrenia, and I've actually been studying this for the past 15 years. I'm really, you know, delighted and honored to be on this panel today with really some of the giants of the stigma field. My own training is interdisciplinary, so it's a blend of psychology, anthropology, and epidemiology, as you're going to see in the research that I'll be present to you today. And the first piece, two pieces of my talk will be around a stigma framework by which to understand how culture provides a lens by which stigma is expressed and experienced. I'm going to illustrate this framework, again, among Fujianese immigrants, the group that I work with in the United States. But my proposition is that the framework that we've developed really can be utilized across any cultural group. And then I'll end very briefly with the anti-stigma intervention that we are now piloting with this group. So first, let me start off by talking about how culture shapes and protects against mental illness stigma. So to give you a little bit of a background in terms of the group that I work with, this group of Chinese immigrants come from Fujian province. This is a province within China. You can see here outlined in black. It's located in southeast China, across from the Taiwan Straits. This province is mountainous and not good for farming, and it's near the coast. So folks here have a long history of emigration out from this province to other parts of Southeast Asia, and now most recently the United States. Let me give you a crash course in Chinese social dynamics. This is really important for the rest of the presentation. So this first concept is renqing. These are three things, I would say, four things actually, by which a lot of, if you understand these things, you'll understand a lot of how actually Chinese society, traditional Chinese society operates. So this is notion of renqing. You can think of this as reciprocity. So essentially, it's the give and take in relationships that can be emotional, instrumental, that also have a gift exchange component. And these are pretty, you know, tightly regimented in Chinese society. Second is this notion of guanxi. This is a really critical concept of social exchange networks. What guanxi networks do is they allow you to access social resources, but not just that. What's different about guanxi networks in Chinese societies is that if you are allowed access into a group, so for instance, if you're in this blue person's group in the center, you get access to all the other blue people, right? You also gain access to all of their material resources. So you can borrow from other people. So the thing is that allowance into a guanxi network is very, very tightly guarded. And what determines whether you can get in or not is this notion of lian or face. And so here, it's the reciprocity, but this time primarily with your family and with your parents. There's this notion of filial piety within Chinese society that's so important. This enables people to claim full adulthood or full personhood. And I'm going to use that phrase quite a bit today. It's having full status within your cultural group. So what holds all these things together in Chinese groups is perpetuation of lineage as a core goal. So this is bringing honor to your ancestors that came before you, but then also being sure to continue your lineage through generations and generations following you. Back to the Fujianese. When they come to New York, they are severely disadvantaged. They come under a set of structural vulnerabilities. First of all, smuggled in by a network of smugglers, the Shito or snakeheads, who work together in multiple countries, bring them to the US. They then owe a crippling amount of debt. So it's $80,000 at last count. And they come in by air, land, or sea. And then in addition to being quite disadvantaged because this group is low educated, doesn't have a lot of job skills, they're also undocumented. So they're further vulnerable in terms of not having access to healthcare, job opportunities, education. So when people come in, their number one, two, and three priority is to pay off the debt, because if you do not in a timely fashion, you're at risk of violence and death from the Fujianese group, from the snakehead group, And you can imagine that if a person were to develop psychosis and had trouble, let's say, working consistently, what could happen. So these are actually the folks from Fuzhou detained at the New Mexico border. Just a photo of them. We've identified four core social goals, and I'm gonna collectively refer to these things too as what matters most, okay? The central concept in this framework for this group specifically. So first, the first goal, of course, is to pay off the migration debts. You have to in order, your life is at stake. But after working for 5 years, 6 days a week, 14 hours a day at some menial restaurant job, you then may be able to send your money back to your families in natal China, build their face, build their prestige. Third goal is then to perpetuate the family lineage. So you invite a wife over, sponsor her to come over, pay off her debt. And then fourth, attain legal status in the US. After you've been here for a while through the court system, I don't quite understand it, but you can actually get US citizenship in some cases. And this, again, enhances the entire prestige of the family line, because then forever, your family, you know, has US citizenship. So let me now turn to stigma. And this actually builds off what Bernice had said earlier. This is one of the most famous quotes. I'm sure many of you are familiar with it regarding the Surgeon General's report on mental health. I won't read it to you, but basically, stigma affects everything. It affects psychological well-being. It affects people's creates discrimination for people in the world. It also interferes with dignity and full participation in society. So I use this very crude heuristic diagram, where if you just take a look at the bottom bar, you've got the individual, and the radiating out from the individual, you have the social domains of the self, that person's functioning. So you've got social functioning, family, life opportunities within society. And stigma affects everything. We've had numerous studies that show this. If you were to ask a Fuzhinese individual, domain by domain, they'd probably say, oh yeah, it does affect me in this way. But the thing is, and this I think again is shown by Bernice's work, other people's work as well, that stigma looks different globally. It looks different in different cultural settings. We've thought this to be true for a long time, but there hasn't been a systematic way to really understand this or to really even conceptualize it. So in this slide, I basically have thrown up a whole bunch of characteristics that are associated with Chinese, okay, or Chinese immigrants. Authoritarian, family-centered, education-oriented, my personal favorite, good at math. So basically, though, I've just put this up here because it's a, you know, it's a hodgepodge of things, right? Where would you even start to think about, okay, well, what are the things about culture that would enable us to better pinpoint what's happening in terms of stigma? So I did a lot of work with a mentor of mine, Arthur Kleinman, at Harvard in anthropology, to devise a theoretical framework to really address this issue. And the key sentence in this publication reads, "Mental illness stigma acts in culture-specific ways to impair an actor's capacity to take part in the core everyday engagements that certify one as a fully viable or fully moral member of a local community." Okay, so this is anthro-speak, so let me say it in English. Every social group has a set of everyday engagements or everyday activities that people have to participate in order to be seen as a full or a full human person within that cultural setting, all right? And every cultural group, these activities, some of them are similar, but some of them vary quite markedly depending on who you are, what cultural group you're in. So again, stigma affects everything, but the core thesis is that the proposal is that stigma impacts most powerfully the person's ability to participate in these core and fundamental activities, or what is known as what matters most within each cultural group. So to be very concrete, for the Fuzhinese, the proposal is that stigma will coalesce most forcefully around a Fuzhinese individual's capacity to first obtain competitive employment, second repay debt, third fulfill filial obligations, and extend the ancestral line. So this formulation, so again, this is stigma affects everything from the prior slide. But what the What Matters Most formulation enables us to do, first of all, is to really ascertain in what ways the stigma coalesce for individuals in a cultural group. And secondly, I believe even just as powerfully, what matters most really varies by cultural group and cultural setting. So by empirical methods, we can actually ascertain what it is these fundamental activities that matter most for each group. So in 2014, this is actually data from my completed K award on this topic. We published data regarding from 1550, excuse me, Chinese immigrant consumers in New York City recruited from inpatient units with psychosis. And we gave them semi-structured interviews. We gave them other things too, but this is the part that I will describe to you. And here I'm going to describe to you codes on face and moral experience and what matters most. So I love this quote because, a short anecdote, I was interviewing this Fujianese gentleman on the Chinese inpatient unit and asking him my questions. And basically he doesn't say this to me, more or less says it to me. Stop asking me your silly stammer questions. And he totally breaks away from the interview, and this is what he says to me. Just to bother you to talk to the psychiatrist for me to be discharged sooner. I myself want to work. Because my illness is well for more than 2 weeks, and I don't know why they don't discharge me. What I mean is that I'm going to help out my parents. My father and mother still works in the restaurant, and she's almost in her 60s, and she still has to work. I want to help her just to go to work, that's all. So what matters most here is so clear, so vivid in this person's words. Obviously work, but secondly, you can see embedded in there, the parents are still working. I have to fulfill my obligations to support them. If I do not, I'm not a person by the standards of my culture. And if anybody finds out about this, I'll get kicked out from my Guanxi network, which will then lead to basically the loss of many, many life opportunities. So what we found, Actually, this was sort of the first illustration of the theory we proposed in 2007. We found that actually many instances of quotes like the below, that stigma actually intensifies when ability to earn money in this group specifically is impaired. So the first quote, have family members looked down on you when they found out you have this condition? No, it's about your ability. If your ability is good, they will do their best to help you. If not, they will neglect you. So ability, again, is where stigma is felt most powerfully. Second quote, why would the consumers on the unit be looked down on? Because many consumers are looked down by others. What I heard from relatives are that the consumers just become sick. And the relatives think the consumers are useless and will not care for them. Consumers are unable to make money. Relatives would not come to visit the consumers. Some people even are afraid to pick up the consumers when they are discharged. So again, here you can see the core capacity here is to make money. And this person is excluded, could be excluded based upon this. So that's all well and good. We had a surprise finding actually emerge from the qualitative analyses. And if you think about it, it's actually a corollary to the primary theory that, okay, if what matters most actually shapes the way that stigma is felt, could having these capacities actually protect against the worst aspects of stigma? And actually, we found, I wasn't looking for this, but we actually found this across these different interviews. So again, I'll read you the first quote. Most people in your community would think that people with mental illness would make a person lose face. No, because he goes to work, still goes to work and he goes home. You see that if a person with mental illness continues to work, that's not considered a shameful thing. Yes, right. So again, here, work is the core capacity. If a person has it, the other effects of stigma are minimized. Second quote, what do you fear would happen if you tell your friends about your mental illness? The sky will collapse, he's being sarcastic. There's nothing that will happen. I'm still young and I have my hands and feet, so he has his ability to work. I can work in any field, no problem. Besides, I am married, no problem. So here he's very clearly saying, I have all the things that make me a person in my world, so I cannot be affected by the other aspects of stigma. So what I think was, again, very powerful about this finding is that it gives us a roadmap to actually intervene with the ways that stigma look within different cultural settings. Because again, if we can identify these core capacities, we've always had a very difficult time trying to negate the effects of stigma upon consumers. And so I think this especially could give us, again, a map in which to do so. So we took this a step further, and this is very new work. I'm a little hesitant to present it here today, but the thing is it's just exciting set of intriguing findings, and I think it concretizes the first part. So I wanted to present it to you today. So this is operationalizing what matters most. So what we've tried to do here, okay, let me first of all start with the what I call, quote unquote, universal stigma. And this is actually taken from the devaluation discrimination scale from my mentor, Bruce Link, and our colleagues' work. And Bruce's scale has been used for many different studies all around the world. And it's an aspect of internalized stigma, it's stereotype awareness, and it really hits the different major domains in which stigma could impact an individual with mental illness. And I've highlighted three here. So rejection from being a close friend. Secondly, an employer would not hire a person with mental illness for a job. Third, that a young woman would not marry a person with mental illness, okay? And so these things are pretty, you know, really, really good, have been utilized all around the world and have been shown, actually, to impact quality of life, depression, and self-esteem for people with mental illness. In a recent meta-analysis, actually, in 2010, by Livingston and Boyd, showed that it has, you know, powerful effects. But my question to you is, did these items capture stigma, all the important aspects of stigma, all around the world? Can we possibly improve upon this? So, what we've done actually is within these 50 interviews, we've identified the what matters most text. So you'll notice here, this is the quote where the person wants to come and help his parents to work, okay? So every instance of what matters most, it could be this, it could be a variation of it, there are a whole different set of domains, but they cluster around this. We actually created a stigma item for each sort of, you know, utterance of what matters most. And so this item reads, most Chinese people believe that the worst aspect of mental illness is that the person cannot earn money to support parents. And that captures the core essence of this you know, piece of text. And so what we did is we assembled them, got rid of the redundant ones, and we pilot tested it now. Let me just show you three out of the 17 items that made this scale. This is the culture shaped stigma scale among the Chinese immigrant group. So most Chinese people think that the worst aspect of mental illness is that the person cannot earn money to support parents. That's the one I just showed you. Number 9, most Chinese people think that one of the worst aspects of mental illness is that the person cannot marry and perpetuate their lineage. Okay, makes sense given what I've told you. 13, most Chinese people believe that a person with mental illness will lose face in the end. So you can see here, these items, if I were to ask them of a Western European audience, I think most people would be like, huh? Like, you know, this doesn't really make sense, right? But when you ask it to a Chinese group, it makes perfect sense. And it actually tags on, you know, to the, again, we took these literally from, their own words. So what we've shown are that for, the universal stigma items impact these three things. Question then, what about the culture-specific stigma items? I'm going to show you super preliminary data. We're doing a pilot study of 60, of looking at this construct validity test among 60 consumers with mental illness among Chinese immigrants. I only have data on 17, okay? So this is very, very preliminary. It could really change. But this is what we've found just based on this small sample, that actually the universal stigma items impact quality of life and depression, but actually in this group, for whatever reason, not self-esteem. And what ends up happening, and so the question was that with the culture-specific items, would they predict on top of the universal items? Would they have a particularly powerful relationship to one or more of these three domains? Empirical questions. This is what we found so far. It actually is not associated with quality of life or depression, but instead is powerfully associated with self-esteem. And this actually fits the theory if you think about it, because again, if these are the capacities that determine personhood, what are the things that, you know, make me a full person within my community, then these are actually the things that should be most powerfully associated with this domain. I would also note that if we want to promote capacities for full personhood for people, this is a big, people with mental illness, this is a big aspect of recovery, then these are the things that we should be noting and attending to. Let me just wrap up very briefly with a stigma intervention that we've piloted in New York and California. It's a 10-session intervention. It's based on, actually, we published this on Chinese immigrant family members of people with psychosis. And the intervention is to enhance work performance, face preservation, and social recovery. The format is with one clinician and one peer co-leader. It's a 10-week curriculum. And this is, again, a very preliminary data, 16 consumers of mental illness, pilot studies, so no control group. Again, this is who they are. I'll just point out three things. Mostly Chinese speaking, so 14, mostly identified with psychosis. And then third, and at the bottom of the slide, you can see a wide range of mental health symptoms in terms of, duration, averaging 16.8. The group content is psychoeducation, experience discrimination, and internalized stigma. So these are the things that people are taught to resist. In the future, we want to develop a faith restoration module, again, based on the whole what matters most, you know, perspective, and in enhancing these forms of personhood for this group. Okay, let me just jump into the results. What I looked at was stereotype awareness. So again, awareness of stereotypes in society, agreement with those stereotypes, and then how much it impacts people's self-esteem. This is based on Pat Corrigan's seminal work in terms of really operationalizing internalized stigma. Okay, when we implemented this intervention, it was incredibly difficult. I just wanna, before I jump into the results, it took us 4 months longer to recruit the Chinese individuals into the intervention. We planned 2 months originally because the stigma is so pervasive, and literally the people would say, yeah, stigma is a problem, but what can you do about it? You know, it's like, it's just a fact of life. You know, there's nothing that I could possibly do to overcome it or to try to counter it. So we ran this intervention with the hopes of trying to learn something. Maybe we would find something that was beneficial. But the results actually were really surprising to me. We found significant decreases in awareness of stereotypes, so that's about a 15% drop, and that's significant statistically. In terms of agreement with the stereotypes, it's trend significance, about a 10% drop. But the most powerful findings were actually upon impacts on self-esteem. So we found a 20% drop after the intervention was done. And out of the 16 respondents, 12 of them actually decreased from pre to post, and that these 12 respondents decreased more than 10%. So it's a generalized effect that we found in the group. So I just want to conclude. I hope I've done today for you is to provide a new framework for how culture shapes stigma. And most importantly, you know, the framework is lovely, the theory is lovely, but how can we actually utilize it to impact people's lives for the better? So through the measurement of it, through the intervention developed, you know, to promote these capacities. And future directions include promotion of the peer contact model. You know, Pat has been one of the world leaders in this, but especially in the Chinese immigrant and other culturally diverse groups, they're not used to this model. And then also, can we utilize these aspects of face restoration for Chinese immigrants, for instance, within clinics? Can we utilize the what matters most perspective to reduce public stigma in different cultural groups around the world? And so I won't read this to you, this is basically a quote from one of the consumers. I'm sorry for the people who can't read Chinese, but it's very hopeful. And again, something that I would not have thought was possible before we started the stigma intervention. And this is some of the work that I've done, if you want to read up on it. Thanks so much.